All right. Good morning, Charles. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. I'm a little cold. I'm up and I'm down. I'm up in New Jersey visiting family during the coldest week of the year. So, I was looking, it's going to get down to like two or three, something like that over the next couple of days here. Right. And that's not wind chill. That's just straight up weather temperature. I didn't even look at the wind chills. Yeah. And unfortunately no precipitation during that time. So it's not going to be a white Christmas. It looks like it's going to be a clear and sunny day, but just freaking cold. So, but
that is brutal.
It's a little rough, but you know, I've managed to squeeze 50 pounds worth of sweaters and jackets and stuff into my bag. So, didn't have to pay any extra. But it was a little tight to be able to do that for a week. Cause I'm a little bit of a princess. I have a lot of crap that I bring with me on my trips. So,
I know you do.
Yeah. You have got a little different background there yourself.
Yeah. I'm over in St. Pete at, the client's getting some work done, trying to squeeze in some repairs, before Christmas. Mm-hmm. And it's, been a complicated, had a brief outage 2 days ago that I mostly recovered from, but there's some lingering issues I'm trying to knock out before I can completely, you know, sort of disconnect for Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. So we'll see. I'm looking at the Orlando weather and, the low tonight will be 31. The low tomorrow will be 31 and the high on Sunday will be 48. So we've got some, unseasonably chilly temperatures down here as well.
That's definitely cold for Florida. You also are back from a cruise that you went on last week, right?
Yep. Did 4 nights on the Oasis of the Seas. That was my biggest Royal Caribbean ship so far. And it was nice. There were some things about that ship that were amazing, and then some things I wasn't a huge fan of. They had a diving / dancing / synchronized swimming show that was ridiculous right on the boat.
Wow.
Where I mean people were diving from, I don't know, it had to be at least 10 meters. I mean, it was like they had some real high diving boards, and it was crazy. But one thing I didn't like was, remember the piano bar is where all the trivia usually happens. It's called the Schooner Bar.
Yeah.
And that's usually one of my favorite venues on the ship. I love hanging out there. But this one, it only had one way in and one way out.
Oh.
So most of them, you can kind of walk through it.
Yeah.
It's like in the middle of the deck, so you can pass through on your way to the casino or on your way here, there, or wherever. But this one, you walk in and you walk out the same way. And there were some trivia, and this boat had like 5,000 or 6,000 passengers on it. And so this bar would get just absolutely crowded with people playing trivia, and people were sitting on the floor, and then where they were sitting on the floor was in the way of being able to walk out. And I did not care for it. Oh, it was too crowded.
Wow. That's not fun.
Then some of the elevators too. There were two banks of elevators. No, I'm sorry. There were four with six apiece. So they had like 24 elevators on the ship. But if you were on a high floor trying to go to a higher floor, so many of the times that the elevator would open, it was already completely packed with people. So you were just out of luck. You had to wait for the next one.
That's never fun. So I know. Yeah.
What I'm saying is, bigger is not necessarily better.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, bigger is better if you don't have to share it with other people.
Right. Yeah. If they kept the same amount of people on right. these huge boats, that'd be amazing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But oh my gosh. Financially, I don't know how I could talk them into that.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, might be a tough sell. Might be a tough sell. Yeah. I know. Just waiting at the elevators, you just feel like you're burning time. You know, there's so much to do, and you know, there isn't a whole lot of time on those cruises. So, I get it. Yeah. Sometimes I'll, you know, do the elevator trick where I'll push both directions and whatever opens up first, I'll hop on and just go for the ride, you know?
Yeah, I've done that too. And it's crazy. This, I think the last boat you and I were on, it only had, I want to say maybe 11 or 12 decks. And this one had 17. Whoa. And yeah. And the walk from one end of the ship to the other was just gargantuan. It was, I got so many steps in on this trip. It was crazy. But yeah, a little too big, and they're going bigger. The next boat that's coming out is going to be even larger than this one. And I just, it's hard to see the, at some point it gets to be too much.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
I am anxious to go. I'm anxious for another one. So maybe for my birthday next year, I'll be ready to do another cruise trip. We'll see. So you're coming back to town on the Wednesday after Christmas. Is that correct? Right?
Yep.
Any New Year's plans?
No. As of now, no, I have not made any New Year's plans. How about you?
No, I'm on New Year's Day. My girlfriend and I we're both moving our RVs to a new campground. So,
oh, exciting!
And moving day, even though all of our stuff just fits in our RVs, moving day is still a bit of a stressful experience. So I'm not planning on staying awake until the ball drops. Yeah. I will have a nice, calm, chill New Year's Eve and fall asleep early, I hope, and wake up early and start, you know, preparing the cat, the camper, the U-Haul pickup truck that I'm going to rent, all that stuff, all those logistics, have got to be sorted out. And she starts her new job full time on the 26th, but thankfully they don't have anything for her on New Year's Eve or New Year's Day. Wow. So
yeah,
that's not going to get in the way of our move. But I was kind of getting ready for, you know, if they needed her to work those days, what we were going to do to accomplish getting checked out of the old place, checked into the new place, and having her put in a full day's work. So thankfully we're not going to have to do that.
That's great. Yeah. I mean, I definitely enjoy New Year's,
right,
but it can be a little bit, you know, a little bit overrated and kind of overhyped and stuff like that. So I think this year it's going to chill out. It'll be, you know, maybe go to dinner or something like that, but nothing crazy. So.
Yeah. And this will be my first New Year's Eve, not having even so much as a champagne toast. This will be New Year's Day will be 1 year since I've allowed the devil's poison to touch these lips.
Oh, wow. Wow. Well, congratulations in advance. That's pretty impressive, man. A whole year. I know you started out with doing a month, a dry January, and it rolled into a dry extra 11 months.
It did. Yeah. Dry calendar year, I suppose. And no plans to change. But yeah, it's interesting where I didn't have a super compelling reason to keep going, but you know, now it's just I'm used to it, and it feels like I've strung along successive days of not having anything. So, you know, it's almost like, you know, whether I have a long beard or a short beard in the grand scheme of things is pretty trivial. But once it gets to a certain length, you're like, oh, I don't want to cut it because, you know, I've let it go this long.
But also it's probably, you know, it's definitely getting easier, I'm sure, over time, you know, you know, that's, you know, kind of also.
Yeah, it is. And it's not like there was a problem I was trying to solve. I tell people frequently that I've always had a pretty boring relationship to alcohol. And so whether I'm having zero or I'm having a little bit, doesn't seem to affect much, except, I mean, it is way cheaper when you go out to dinner and neither of you are drinking. Mm-hmm. I mean, that saves it's like half the price of some of the bills my girlfriend and I used to ring up at a restaurant.
Oh, I bet.
And, so that part's nice. And I think my sleeping, you know, if I had a couple, even just two drinks and then went to sleep, I didn't wake up as refreshed as I do now.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
So
yeah.
again, even though I'm not, there wasn't a problem I was trying to fix, I can definitely see people who make the choice for mental and physical health reasons. There's definitely some benefits there. I mean, and if you don't believe me, just listen, put on any random Huberman podcast. I think he probably is going to reference it at least once.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. Yeah, I probably will. I'll also do a dry January again this year, I think. You know, I definitely feel better when I'm not drinking, and I definitely sleep better as well. So yeah, I definitely identify with that for sure.
Yeah. The sleeping definitely seems to be the biggest tangible benefit that I can easily notice.
Yep.
But, all right. So speaking of, good habits, we're up to chapter 6 in, Tiny Habits by BJ Fogg. And this is one where I'm anxious for you to take the lead, because, you know, it's like once you get to the point where, okay, every day after I hit the button on my coffee maker, I now put on some pants. But that in and of itself doesn't feel life changing. So the question is, how do I ramp that up to, you know, to have that mean other things?
Yeah. So here it's really, that's kind of like the starter step. Right. And the other piece of it, if you remember, they talk about scaling back, right? Scaling, but doing the actual habit and scaling back. So this is where I would, it's a little bit more difficult because you're actually starting and it's almost another habit at this point. It's related. It's very closely related, but it's still something different, right? You're not putting on more pants, right? It's right. So I hope not. I mean, well, it's cold enough there. It might happen actually. Right. You might want to put on a couple extra pairs, but, then it would be, you know, doing the part of the exercise. Right. So maybe that's at that point you would be doing, you know, a scaled back version of the full, you know, of the full exercise.
Right. And so that full exercise for me involves, getting up and, I mean, the ideal version, the place I want to get to is where I wake up and start my coffee, get dressed, go walk for an hour, and then, you know, basically have my step quota for the day done before I pretty much do anything else. Okay. And that's happened sometimes on the days that I have, you know, woken up, hit the button, put my pants or shorts on, but some days it hasn't. And I think I'm doing a pretty good job of not feeling guilty about that or not feeling like I'm failing, because I have strung together quite a few days of, you know, getting the starter step done. Okay. But I don't know, the next step doesn't feel as automatic. So
right.
Do I then make my starter just a little bit more complex, or what's the thing that I do now? Well,
I what I would say is you would do something. My suggestion would be to do something that is related to you doing your 10,000 steps. So what could you do that would be really small that you could do on your, you know, on your worst day, or even if it was like nasty weather out? What would that look like? Do you have any ideas?
Well, I could continue with pants and just get fully dressed. I mean, from, you know, shirt, shorts, socks, and shoes.
Okay. And that would be, and you'd be dressed, and this is something you'd be wearing when you go walking and do your 10,000 steps.
Right. Or if it was crappy weather and I wasn't going to walk that day, I mean, I'd still be dressed for whatever the next thing was that I was going to do inside.
Yeah. I mean, that's great. That's absolutely great. Yeah. So take it to that level. So that's actually kind of related. Yeah. But let me ask you though, are you doing that already though?
On days that I do go walking, I'm doing it. On the other days, no, I'm just putting my shorts on and kind of calling it there.
Okay. All right. So then I would say get fully dressed, whether you're going walking, whether you actually end up going walking or not.
And okay, so does that become my starter step, or Is my necessity every morning is still just put my pants on.
I would say let's just keep it at putting your pants on. And that's your, you know, that's the tiny habit. That's like the worst thing you do. And then here, you know, not the worst thing, but basically that's, you know, the, you know, at the very minimum, that's all you do. Right. And I mean, even, you know, even then, I think, you know, that's something, yeah. What I would say is get to the point of where it starts to feel a little bit weird if you just kind of just do your pants, right? And so you're getting fully dressed. So that's the intention, right? And you know, start from there. And again, here it's, you do more when you feel like doing more, right? So keep it just putting the pants on. And okay. It's, you know, this could be something, you know, if you remember earlier in the chapter, he was talking about one of the stories was a lady named Sarika who basically was dealing with a lot of, you know, I guess some anxiety and some, you know, mental health issues. And one of the things that she was doing was she would water the plant as part of one of her tiny habits. And if it was difficult for her to do that very minimum, you know, tiny habit of that starter step of just watering a plant, that little habit, right. It was an indication that maybe, you know, that other things for her during that day weren't going to be as easy to do because maybe she's a little tired. Maybe her anxiety was up. Maybe she was not feeling that great. So, you know, maybe, you know, something to think about here is if you really only feel like putting your pants on and not doing much, you know, just it's just an indication for you to take it easy on yourself that day and just, you know, kind of take your foot off the gas a little bit and go, hey, maybe I need to be a little bit more rested. You know, maybe I'm a little bit more tired than I realize. Right.
Yeah, I really did like the way that he encouraged her to use that as sort of a little bit of a, you know, mental health thermometer to right. See, okay, you know, when things are going great, then watering a plant is like nothing. It's super easy. So if watering a plant seems daunting to you for any reason, that's a pretty good indication that you may be getting ready to slip into a low mood state and things could be getting difficult. So still have that very small thing you can do and that you plan to do every day. And then let that be sort of what guides you to say, okay, I've got to pay special attention to a, you know, potential low mood or depressive episode coming on.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And then, just knowing that, Maybe you can rearrange some things to rest a little bit more, right? Or slow down a little bit more, or give yourself a little bit more time to do the things on your list that you, or, you know, the things that you were going to do that day, you know, just slow down, give yourself a little bit more time, be a little bit more patient with yourself, just like you would with somebody else, right? That you would see, hey, somebody else right. Is a little bit tired or beat up or hungover or, you know, in, you know, depressive state. You'd be a little bit, you know, kinder and, you know, hold them with a little bit more care and TLC than you would normally. And just do that, you know, just know that you should do that for yourself. It doesn't mean you need to do that for the rest of your life. It's just maybe for that day, maybe not even, maybe it's for the next few hours until you start to feel a little bit better. So don't try to feel right. Like you've done something wrong or there's something wrong with you. You know, it's human. You're human, and this is life, right? And this is what happens.
Yeah, and remembering that, to give yourself that grace that you would give somebody you care about is, right. That's something we've talked about in just about every book. You know, don't treat yourself more harshly than you would treat somebody that you care right. About.
Right.
All right. Right. So, what about? So we've talked about sort of what it takes to make the tiny habit build into something bigger so that you're accomplishing sort of the end result that you want. What about when you feel like, okay, this is going pretty well. Maybe I need to add some additional habits. It seems like one may have the tendency to try to tiny habit their whole life at once because they had some one small success in one particular area. Now it's like, okay, if one habit's good, then two dozen is even better. So let me try to completely, you know, rebuild my life around tiny habits. And that's something that has occurred to me. I haven't been too tempted to do that, but I've thought, ooh, I bet I could use this to do X, Y, or Z as well. And I know I have that tendency to sort of jump in, obsess, and then lose interest. So I don't want to do that. I want to you know, slow this down and scale it out slowly.
Well, I think the important thing here is go back to your intention, right? Or go back to your aspiration is and your your goals are. Excuse me, BJ doesn't like the word goals, but your aspiration, you know, or your outcome, right? So what is
okay,
you know, and I feel like yes, you absolutely could tiny habit your entire life, but where I feel like it might, where you might kind of get uninterested is if it doesn't tie into an aspiration or an outcome that you have, right? So, I think you certainly, you know, the idea is, you should be doing at least, you know, I know he has, you know, through his program has people, do like a 5-day course, a tiny habit program. And he has you pick three different habits, right? And the idea here is that, you know, one or two of them might fail, might not go well, but one of them might work. And the idea here is you learn from the ones that, you know, that did work. And then you can make adjustments to the ones that didn't, right? And so he does definitely advocate for doing more than one at a time, not maybe two dozen, but you know, that I think it's going to be tough to have, you know, two dozen that all tie to aspirations that are really important to you. So, you know, my thought is go back to the aspiration and then look at, you know, kind of go through the steps that he takes us through, which is, you know, basically magic wanding. And maybe you already have a list of those behaviors you've already created. So maybe look for another golden behavior, another one that is, you know, going to be effective and that you can get yourself to do that's sitting in that upper right quadrant after you do that focus map, right? So maybe this is, you know, maybe we look at another one that falls in that area and you work on one of those, or you pick a completely different, you start over and pick a completely different aspiration that's important to you. So, you know, maybe it's you know, related to having some sort of legacy. So maybe you want to get back into regular journaling again. So that way you've got something to pass on to people after after you're gone. So maybe you go back and go, okay, well, you know, I want to do some journaling. Maybe that's the behavior you want to, you know, get into on a regular basis and get consistent with that, right? And so, you know, and that way, it's also, you know, it's different enough to where you feel like you maybe get a little variety. In my mind, I like having that, you know, and then you can learn something. One of them might be easier than the other. So, that's what I would suggest, is consider, you know, consider a couple of other things here and not go crazy. You know, you got two ways to grow a habit here, right? You can grow it in terms of, and they talk about this in chapter six here, is you can grow a habit. So, you know, for example, your 10,000 steps, right? So the tiny habit for you is really just putting on your pants, but that can grow over time to eventually you know, maybe just in the morning, you just walk around the camper, right? And then from there, you can do, you know, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 steps, whatever, and that will grow in that way. The other thing, another way to think about this is, you can grow. So let's say, you're trying to, you maybe eat a little healthier. And so, you know, the example he gives in the book is maybe you eat an avocado for breakfast or half an avocado for breakfast. It's not like you're going to be eating more and more avocados for breakfast, but what it might have you do is maybe now you're eating blueberries for your after dinner sweet treat, right? Instead of cookies or whatever. So that might, you know, because you've already been doing the avocado habit, it inspires you to maybe drink more water, you know, have different fruits or vegetables throughout the day, things like that, right? So, it's like, and he compares this to, you know, planting seeds, right? So, one way that, you know, the plant can grow is by, you know, watering the seed that it has. And another way is that it spreads its seeds out into, you know, other areas, right? So, again, it's a nice little analogy for the habits that you're building.
Yeah, I you know, there's often the question in when it comes to fitness or body recomposition of, okay, what do I do first? Do I bulk up my muscles or do I, you know, try to slim down and shed body fat? And I guess one of my questions is, what should the focus be on, creating more habits or sort of going more deeply into the two or three habits that you think are going to be the most bang for your buck as far as getting to your aspiration? And because I feel like, I don't know, maybe both is the answer, but it seems like it would be unlikely that you should put all your energy into both going wider and deeper at the same time.
Yeah. So it really depends on, so I think, you know, in terms of, you know, body recomposition, there's certain things that are, there's certain things across the board that are paramount. And to whether you want to lose weight or lose body fat or build muscle, it really, first of all, it starts with what you're putting in your mouth. And so I think regardless right. of which direction you want to go in, that's where you want to, I think, work on the most. I think that's the thing that we are doing all day, every day, multiple times a day. And that's right. going to have the most impact on our, you know, on whether, you know, on our body recomposition efforts. So right. I would say,
if you're eating a Big Mac and a pizza every night for dinner and you're asking that question, then you don't understand what you're actually doing. Right.
Right. Right. So what I would say is get, and the thing is, whether you want to lose weight or gain weight, you should still be eating fairly clean. So what I would say is the first right. effort is make habits food related to get clean. You know, and get as, you know, get, or get cleaner than perhaps where you are. Then sure. consider, I would say, is tracking, is figuring out tiny habits to track, because if you don't know what you're eating, you can't make the adjustments. Because really, whether it comes to gaining weight or losing weight, really calories is still important. And in terms of, you need, you know, you want to lose weight, you got to burn more than you're eating, and vice versa. If you want to gain weight, and if you don't have any ability to track that, you're going to be wasting a lot of time guessing. So I would say is clean up right. the diet, then figure out ways that aren't totally painful for you to track. And then, right. you know, once that becomes a little bit easier and you've kind of got that down, and, you know, then look to figure out if you can, you know, what you're eating, and look at a food plan and look at what you're, you know, consuming. And then you kind of got to monitor, you know, your weight or your measurements in some way, right? So those are all, there's so many different right. behaviors that are required for just that part before even getting into the gym, right? All that stuff.
Right,
so
right.
once that is, I feel like once that's established, then you can look at, okay, you know, going to the gym and working out. In the meantime, it's good to stay active. So don't overthink it. Do the activities, just be physically active, just move, you know, maybe do some body weight exercises, things like that. Do whatever you know, again, all of these habits and behaviors really are designed to be done, or are designed to be the ones that you want to do. So don't do anything, you know, that's going to, you know, don't feel like you should be doing this or should be doing that. Do it because, you know, you like it, or it rolls up into you supporting your aspiration or outcome.
Yeah, I like that. And I can already see myself trying to make this more complicated than it needs to be, where, you know, trying to focus on the trees instead of the forest, which is also a tendency that I will have on occasion. Yeah. Let's see, let me try to think of when I listened to the beginning of this chapter, I remember something sort of clicking with I think it was Sukumar, the guy that at the very beginning that he talked about, where, I mean, that guy was also trying to, you know, get in shape, get to be fitter, and like went for years, you know, with the thought of I should do this, but he wasn't able to really make it happen. But now, I guess at 51 years old, he's doing 50 pushups every morning.
Yeah. So, and 5 minute planks. Right. So, yeah.
Oof,
and
that was brutal.
Yeah. And he did talk about how Sukumar did try some diets and some exercise programs where it was, they were extreme, right? Crash diets, really extreme exercise programs. Yep. And like most of us who have tried those things, I'm included in that. You know, you might be able to do it and grind it out based on like pure motivation, right? For a couple of weeks or a month or two or whatever. But then what happens is you've gone too hard, too fast. Maybe you're not tracking things properly. You're focusing not necessarily on the right things, and you end up not really making progress, or it's very short lived. And then you get discouraged right away and you're operating on pure motivation. And so it's not sustainable. And then you're like, well, what do I do afterwards? And it's just too extreme. So really it's him realizing, hey, that's not the way. Let me start, let me just start with my own real easy thing where it was just, you know, two pushups and, you know, a 5 second plank. And then just kind of, and when he felt good, you know, he was able to he decided, all right, I'm just going to keep going. I'm already in a plank position. I'm already here doing pushups. Just do a few more. And eventually, what happened was his identity changed. And so he started to do other little things. So basically, not only did the habit kind of grow on its own naturally, but it, you know, sprinkled other habits throughout his day. So maybe he'd take the stairs and take instead of an elevator, right? Maybe he, you know, would park a little bit further away in a parking lot and start walking. And that's, and the reason why he did that was because his identity started to change, because now he's the kind of person who cares about his health, who is thinking about, you know, I want to be, you know, healthy and in shape. And so the kind of person in his mind that cares about their health takes the stairs, walks, you know, a little bit further in a parking lot and enjoys those things, right? And has a little bit of pride about those things. And now that starts to plant other things. And now all of a sudden it's easier to drink. And I don't know if you've ever heard this, but, you know, some people are like, oh, they eat like garbage. But if they start working out, they automatically start eating a little better too. And it's because, and it's tied to their identity. While I'm working out, all right, now I'm going to think twice about having that dessert or whatever. Because now it's kind of top of mind. That's something that I'm doing. And somebody who's working out doesn't eat, you know, an entire cake by themselves, right? So, or doesn't normally do that, right? That's not the kind of person that you think would do something like that, right? So then it's by you doing that or continuing to do that, if you do that, you're then basically, you know, you've got a conflict of identity, which, you know, doesn't sit well with us. So, yeah. And that's the takeaway from that, from chapter six, when he's talking about was Sukumar, by starting tiny, he started to think of himself differently. And then that really started to feed the additional habits and other things like that. So, I think it's important as you start doing some of these tiny habits is, you know, picture yourself or picture somebody who does these things. What are the things that they do? How do they carry themselves? You know, what kinds of things do they do? What kinds of things do they eat? What do they say? Who do they talk to? What's important to them? You know, and it's, you know, even if it's not something you do naturally, you know, it's, think of it maybe as you're playing a role, like in a play or something like that. And just, you know, right, pretend to be that person for a little bit.
Okay. So what, you know, so this fella gets from two pushups after he brushes his teeth to doing 50 a day and a 5 minute plank. What is it you look for that morning that you does, like, how do you know when it's time to go from two pushups to three?
Okay. So, and he talked about this in the book was, his form felt better. His actual, so it's a slight, so basically he felt like, as he was doing these on a daily basis, by the time he did his second pushup, he noticed that his form was a little bit better, a little bit tighter perhaps, and he felt good. Mm. And it was a little bit easier. So, okay. At that point, it's like, how are you feeling? Are you feeling listen, motivation is kind of taken out of the equation here to some extent, but part of this is also here is a little bit of motivation because he's kind of excited to do it because he kind of, you know, he's already, you're going to remember also part of this is the celebration, right? You need to be feeling good when you're doing these things. At the end of them, you're supposed to be celebrating, right? And, and, And so eventually I think what happens is your brain starts to wire in those feeling good, you know, the circuitry there and the hormones to feel good. And so when we're feeling good, it's also, remember, dopamine is also a motivation hormone and gets you to do things. So right. You might be at the end of that too, your form is on point. So the ability there also, it improves, right? So it's a little bit easier to do. And remember, you know, so the line here with the, the B equals MAP right here. So that now right. The ability has gone up and the motivation's gone up a little bit because you're feeling good. Yeah, go ahead. Maybe do a couple more and see how you feel.
I'm wondering about folks who have a tendency to do too many more. Like, okay, two feels good. Let me go ahead and knock out 10. Right. And then it's miserable. And then tomorrow I just skip it entirely.
So one of the tricks that BJ says is if you push yourself to the point of where it's a little painful, a little bit beyond, enjoyable, double up on the celebration. Find additional ways to get kick it up a notch. So maybe you do two or three different type of celebrations, ways to pat yourself on the back to feel successful, knowing that you pushed yourself that hard.
Okay. And then, but what about, I don't know, where does it come in where you correct yourself to realize, okay, I pushed myself too hard. I shouldn't do that again. Or maybe I should do that. I don't know. You know,
stop shooting all over yourself.
Cause I'm just thinking
stop shooting all over yourself
the way I am.
Listen to your body. So the next day when you get down, and let's say, for example, you're like really sore cause you overdid it the day before, I would just do the two and celebrate and you're good and know that you're not going to be as sore the next day and then reevaluate, right? Maybe you're still too sore to do more than two. Fine. But eventually you'll get back down there and be like, okay, so you know what? I'm not going to do, 37 again. Maybe I'll stop at, 20 or something like that, it's all part of that experiment mindset. That's really what it is. And use your own feelings for the guide to say, all right, I want to back off or I want to do more. Remove the should, listen to your body, feel your body and go and be proud and celebrate and be grateful, to your body and try to not, don't compare yourself to other people. Don't compare yourself to Sukumar on his best day or on his worst day, right? Compare yourself to what you've done previously. And I think there's a lot of, what makes things super easy and enjoyable to do is when you get to the point of where you can do intuitive exercises and intuitive eating, meaning, you've established such a good communication with your body that you know how far to go to feel good, how far to go when when it's too much. And the same thing with food. You can get to the point of where you can get pretty damn close to knowing what you should be eating to lose, maintain, or gain weight after you've been measuring the ingredients for a while, eating consistently, and then listening to your body's, physical feelings and hunger signals and soreness and things like that. And then it gets very easy to really, maintain weight or gain weight, things like that. So that's where I feel like, these things can really be beneficial and kind of get you towards that state of mind, right?
Okay. Yeah. I've got the, I'm buying in. And, I guess the next question I have is, okay, so I've got this goal, this aspiration, this whatever of being in a certain place with my body, a year from, I don't know, about 4 weeks ago, right? So I got 11 months still to work on this. How often do I need to reevaluate my aspiration and ask myself, okay, is this still important enough to me to continue doing these things? And also, is the list of habits or behaviors I put together actually still things that I want to do and that I like doing?
Yeah.
or they're like, how do I look at that weekly? Do I look at that daily?
That's a great question. What I would say is the same thing that, let's go back to the Sirica example, is if you are doing that tiny habit and it's getting to be a pain to do, and it's it's really difficult to just put on those pants, or I mean, in this case, maybe eventually it's walking around your camper, maybe something like that, right? Maybe if that is start to go like, I really don't like this, like, or it's just, it becomes very difficult to do, you're missing it more often than you're doing it. Yeah, that's where you'd go back and go, okay, maybe this, you know, maybe so, and then BJ recommends actually going, you know, looking at, hey, is there a way I could make this habit easier to do? And then maybe also is what's making this habit now hard to do. And then you go through, you know, the ability chain, right? And you go through, you know, is it too much mental effort? Is it too much physical effort? Is it, you know, too expensive? Is it take too much time, right? All these things, there's a fifth one I can't remember off the top of my head now, but go ahead and go through that. And then if there's nothing that really comes to mind, then at that point, maybe it's just time to let go of that habit and try a different one, right? And so then if you're kind of going through the habits and you're like, you're not really excited about doing any of them, then yeah, maybe then look at the aspiration and go, maybe I don't care about having, you know, six pack anymore, you know, or,
right,
you know, leaving a legacy, you know, maybe that's just not that important to me. And so it really, yeah, it gets more difficult to do just that little thing. Cause remember here, that tiny habit, that starter step, you know, we should be able to do it on our worst day. And if you can't even do that, then that's when you start tinkering, and that's when you, and it's all okay. Right. I mean, that's, nothing is set in stone.
Yeah, that freedom feels good to not have to feel like you're dragging something. I mean, yeah, it's like if you're super into riding a bicycle, and then at some point you decide, I don't like riding bikes anymore, but you're like, yeah, but I got this bicycle, so now I'm just going to carry it around with me wherever I go. Boy, that gets miserable real fast.
Yeah, and that can really put a damper on you wanting to do anything else too. Right. Like, oh, and related to like physical stuff, whatever. And, you know, something to think about too is, you know, you're asking about, you know, I should, you know, do more, I should do this. Think of your body as your partner in this, right? Is, you know, you need to work with your partner to accomplish what your goals are for yourself. And so you're not working with, you know, David Goggins, who does crazy amounts of exercise every day, right? That's not,
right.
But you know, you might be inspired by him, but it's very difficult to, but a lot of times that's where we get our shoulds from. Well, he's doing all this crazy stuff, I should at least do blah, 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 blah. Instead of,
right.
Instead of talking to your body, quote unquote, right. Communicating with it and go, okay, well, yesterday I got sore after 12 pushups. Maybe, you know, maybe I need to back off a little bit, even though, you know, Goggins is doing 100 at a time, you know, whatever. So, but you know, that's who you're bringing to the party, right? Is your body. So do the best and communicate and, you know, get that feedback mechanism going, with your body. And, you know, and then that will help you love it a little bit more, and it will love you back, and it'll give you the information that you need, and it's just going to simplify everything too. I really believe that.
Yeah, you bring up a great point that looking at your body as a partner and not like, okay, I've got to, you know, my mind says I want to do this thing. Now I just have to beat my body up to the point where it submits and, you know, goes along with this plan.
Right.
And that seems like a good way to fail at trying to make any positive health changes, I mean, right?
Yeah. Replace your body with like a friend or, you know, girlfriend or whatever. Like,
right.
If you were trying to help them in some way, would you be, you know, you should do this and you should do that? It doesn't, It's not going to be very effective. It's not going to work very well, right? And same thing with, you know, trainers who have a tendency to like yell at their clients and stuff like that. That's not, it's really not effective. And you know, go back to BJ's maxim, you know, help people be successful, feel successful. And also, you know, you change best by feeling good, not by feeling bad. So, you know, work with your right. body, be supportive, make your body feel good. And it, you know, it'll support you.
Yeah, that is, I even have the tendency to do that where I look at, you know, my body with its occasional laziness or cravings or whatever that seems to be getting in the way of doing the thing I feel like I should be doing. Yeah, right. you can very easily, or even, you know, not being able to get up as much weight as I think I should at the gym or whatever, you can easily fall into this pattern where you look at your body as your adversary and yeah. like you have to achieve a victory over it to get what you want. And yeah, I could see how that would not be a helpful way to get to your goal.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, if your body's not doing what you would like it to do, you know, start getting curious and, you know, I mean, hypothetically kind of ask and say, hey, listen, what's going on here? What did I do? You know, what happened maybe the day before that, you know, maybe is causing me a little bit of pain or weakness right now, like in your body, right? What, you know, and just kind of start to get curious and again, get that kind of experiment type of mindset and just go, okay, you know, why am I not able to, you know, maybe lift as much, or why am I super hungry today or super thirsty today? What, you know, and start, and, you know, and then just kind of help you learn what to do or what not to do, you know, in the future, but don't, you know, don't think like there's necessarily something wrong with your body at that point, right?
Yeah, keeping that that mindset of partnership, like it's a companion, not a
right,
and then not the thing that's getting in
right.
Way,
yeah, you know? Yep, for sure. Yeah, so
because I think this even gets to some of the stuff we've talked about with meditation, where you know for so much of the time we have this perception that Charles or Dan, that's who we are, that is in our head, and we ride around in our body instead of seeing our body is part of who we are, and a big part. I mean, you know, the naturalists and the materialists among us would say your body is all that you are. And that's
But I mean, in either case,
not the vessel that right. we live in,
but in either case, you know, even if it is a separate vessel, like your car, your camper, whatever, you want to take care of it. You want to be, you don't, you, exactly. you want to support it in every way that you can. So whether, you know, whether you, whatever you believe, whether it's a part of you or not, it's, you know, I think it's going to be beneficial to whatever our thoughts are here to have the best relationship and equipment and keeping it as tuned, fine tuned as possible. I mean, part of the reason, you know, I think why you're not, you know, why you've gone dry and, you know, it's definitely some health benefits for not drinking and stuff like that. And you're treating your body, you know, better, and it's going to respond to that as well.
Yeah. It really is. The car analogy is great because if I'm trying to get my high mileage used car from Orlando to Seattle, there are just some things I can't do. I can't purposely beat the crap out of it and hope that that's going to result in it, right. you know, being more effective right. at transporting right. me. And I also can't say, okay, you know, I'm going to pamper it and give it, way thicker oil than it's supposed to have. And, you know, and 120 octane jet fuel, because if 87 is good, 120 will be right. better. You know, there's just things that you can't do on either extreme and expect to get a good result.
Yeah. And part of that is knowing what kind of car you've got or body you've got and communicating with it and listening right. to it and, you know, and just trying to understand as much as possible the feedback that it's giving you, you know? You know, perfect example. I was in the gym the other day and, you know, I changed up my workout a little bit. I went a little heavier than I normally do for, you know, a certain exercise. And I ended up, you know, I felt a little bit of pain and I just did one more rep and, you know, and then I got a slight injury here on the inside of my elbow. And now, you know, it knocked me out of, you know, doing much at the gym for like 2 weeks because I'm waiting for it to heal. And I didn't listen to, you know, the body initially. And I just, and my mind was like, no, Dan, you should be able to do another rep. No problem. And it, that's all it took was, you know, and it's not like getting snapped, but it was just, it's painful enough. You know, it's I guess considered golfer's elbow because it's on the inside here, but that's, it's apparently a pretty common problem with weightlifters too. So again, I ignored my body and I was like, nope, I shit all over my body. And, yeah. So, and I'm paying a price now because it's a lot more difficult mentally for me to like not go to the gym for 2 weeks versus if I just said, okay, I'll stop right now. I probably wouldn't have needed to take a break. So.
Yeah. And you know, I fall into that exact same trap frequently when I get back into the gym after not being there, it's like the, I base my success purely on the amount of weight on the bar and whether I can get it up for the number of reps. And sometimes my form and things like that get a little sloppy as a result. Then I hurt myself and then boom, I'm out of the gym for 2 months.
Yeah.
And, it's very hard to, it's hard to, especially with, you know, the muscle soreness you get from big lifts like squats, deadlifts, you know, overhead presses. It's like, knowing the first day I get back in the gym and I lift, I'm going to have seven or eight days of, especially squats. I'm going to have 7 or 8 days. The day after is not so bad. I'm just tired. Like my legs just don't work right. But from 48 hours to 7 days later, I'm just so sore. And I know that's going to happen. So it's hard to get back, but it's also hard to remember this in the moment. You know, it's like, Charles, you've been here before. You know exactly how this goes, and yet I don't stop myself from some of these behaviors.
So that's where I would say is, you know, use that experience and do a little planning in advance so that the plan you go in with is takes into account, you know, how sore you normally get from, you know, from lifting. So maybe it's you plan to back off a little bit on the weight or you back off on the reps, whatever that might be, in advance. And so it's not like a game time decision or, you know, when you're planning it out, you're like, oh, I should be able to do all of this right from the beginning. And so, you know, maybe, you know, in these cases, the plan is if you then, you know, start out a little bit, you know, a little bit lighter or a little bit, you know, with less volume, but then you plan it out, you know, for a couple of weeks in advance where you are progressing back up to where you were, that might kind of cover both bases where you've got that urge to kind of really get back into it. But at least this way, you're starting out a little bit more reasonable and you're not totally putting yourself out of commission for a week. And again, just like with food and everything else, you know, having a plan in advance to set that intention can really set your mindset in the proper way. For me, where my case was, my plan was to lift, you know, that many reps and at that heavy weight. And when that I wasn't able to do that, I didn't listen to my body. Right. So that's where, you know, again, my plan, I had never done that much weight before. So my plan should have been a little bit, you know, I should have scaled it back a little bit. I should have made it a little bit tinier and not maybe not as much weight. Right. Or maybe not as many reps. And learning experience.
Yeah. It's funny how this, go big or go home mindset, whether it's nature or nurture, we're just conditioned to think, okay. I mean, the lifting plan I always follow when I'm in the gym doing weights is add 5 pounds to the bar, you know, every time you go in on a linear progression until you can't anymore. And I'll add 5 pounds and then I'll go back the next, you know, 2 days later and I'll be like, well, 5 was so easy. I'll do 15. And so, I mean, that there's only a 10 pound difference there until you get a pattern where it's 15, 15, 15. And then you're talking about 45 pounds instead of 15, you know, and it just, and one of the things I've noticed is my, you know, at part of the benefit, I think, of being on testosterone replacement therapy is my muscles are able to recover and adapt a little bit faster than my connective tissue is able to recover and adapt.
Yeah.
It's like when you're going back to the gym after you've already lifted an amount of weight, your muscles will be like, okay, I can get on board with that. where your ligaments, your tendons, and the and your vertebrae, they're like, whoa, so you go a little too fast for us.
You got to be careful with that for sure. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So anyway, that's I'm glad that he addresses this, you know, sort of the things to do right and the things to do wrong when it comes to scaling up and scaling out, because there are definitely, you know, like the rest of this book, there are things that feel natural and intuitive in building habits that I've seen in my own life fail me multiple times. And yet I still want to have the tendency to fall into those patterns instead of just listening to them.
Yeah. Start with, you know, again, it's an experiment. So I think start where the expert recommends and then can make adjustments from there.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of the things when it comes to, I mean, I know plenty of people that say when it comes to tracking your macros, they're like, you don't have to do this forever. Once you've been through some bulks and some cuts and you've gotten the results that you want to by tracking everything religiously, then you don't have to do that anymore. But, you know, I'm not at the point where I can look at a slice of pizza and decide how many calories, carbs and fat and, you know, protein it is just by looking at it. So I'm at a point where if I want to do this and get the results that I'm looking for, I need to be a little bit more granular than I might have to be 5 years from now. And that's the way it is.
Yeah. You know? And you know, one of the things about you know, eating a little bit cleaner is that when you're doing that, it's a lot easier to track because you've got a lot less variations in terms of, you know, if it's, you know, like a chicken breast and you know, a cup of rice, it's a lot easier to calculate what that's going to be versus a slice of pizza. Because with the pizza, you know, the thickness of the crust, and then you've got the cheese and how much cheese, and then is there sugar in the sauce, or is, you know, what kind of toppings you have on there, how many toppings you have on there. And so that can vary so widely. I mean, you know, it's very difficult to estimate that. But if you're eating simple and clean, it's definitely easier. And so, you know, when you are actively tracking, there is a little bit of an incentive to eat a little bit more simply, a little bit more clean, just for the ease of tracking.
Yeah, there have definitely been times where I've been out and I needed a snack, and just, you know, a piece of cheese or a piece of fruit, it's like, it's just so much easier because it's just that one ingredient, and you're like, you don't have to worry about the combination that somebody's decided to put in place to make this thing super yummy so that you want two instead of one, you know?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yep. So.
All right, cool. Well, I think that's a pretty good spot for us to stop here for today on Chapter 6. Next episode, you and I will get into a little bit more about what happened on my cruise on our Patreon episode, and, you know, some of the things that worked, some of the things that didn't work for me in trying to reach this goal. And then the following week, we'll do Chapter 7. Uh-oh.
Sounds good.
Okay. There we are. Okay, Dan, I'm going to, I will stop the recording, and I want to talk to you about a couple things, and then I'll let you go back to your beautiful Jersey life.
Sounds good. All right, man.
Bye.
See you later. Bye-bye.